Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 99 of the IoT for All podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Chacon, and today's guest is Sar Yaskovitz of Augury. He is a CEO and co-founder and joins us today to share his experience founding and growing an AI-based machine health company. So this is a fantastic episode. Sar was a great guest. So I think you will find a lot of value in this episode, especially as AI and IoT work together even more into the future as we kind of venture down this digital transformation revolution. So without further ado, please enjoy this episode with the CEO and co-founder of Augury, Sar Yaskovitz. Welcome, Sar, to the IoT for All show. How's things going on your end?
Going spectacular. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Where are you calling from?
I'm dialing in from New Jersey, where I've been stuck at home for 7 months with three young kids.
That doesn't sound too terrible. I'm actually in Maryland, so we're close to each other. But yeah, it's great to have you. I think one of the best ways to usually start these shows off is to have our guests give a quick introduction, quick background kind of about themselves, just to give some context to our audience on who they're listening to. So I'd love for you to kind of start off doing that.
Sure. So depending how far you want me to go, I'm originally from Israel. That's where I was born and raised. And I have an engineering background. So I studied in the Technion, which is kind of like MIT. It's a tech-focused university where I graduated with a dual bachelor degree in electrical engineering and physics. Later on, I worked at Intel in the CPU division as an analog architect for 5 years. And roughly 9 years ago, together with my co-founder, we dropped everything and embarked on this journey that became Augury. And 6 years ago, I moved over to the U.S. to build the business side of the company. So the sales, marketing, services, sure, and whatnot.
How have you found your technical kind of background and experience kind of help contribute to the success you've had running the business side of things?
Oh, I think that, you know, so at a high level, what we work with the largest manufacturers to make sure their production lines are more reliable and productive. And our solution is very technical. Okay. Right? So we have kind of all the cutting edge, you can say, buzzwords you can throw at us. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the problem we're solving is also very engineering oriented. So our kind of champions on the customer and the partner side are also typically on the engineering side. And it really helps me and the company to relate to their challenges and problems.
Right. That's great. I found kind of a similar path. A lot of people I've interacted with who run the business side of IoT businesses, you know, it's not a requirement, but having that technical background understanding makes the marketing, the selling, you know, kind of that business development relationship side of thing a little bit easier because they're able to speak the language, understand the problem, you know, kind of tailor their sales and marketing approaches around that technical jargon, and it seemed to be pretty successful. Again, it's not a requirement, but I definitely think it helps and adds a lot of value to anybody in that role.
100%. I can also say that also building a company from the ground up to me is like system architecture. Sure. It also comes in handy.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So let's dive a little bit more into your company. Can you talk a little bit more about what you all do, the role you all play in IoT? And then from there, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the story kind of behind the founding of the company and the problem you all saw or kind of the opportunity you all saw in the market, which kind of prompted the starting of the organization.
Sure. So as I briefly mentioned, you know, we work with the largest manufacturers. So you can think of Colgate, and Essity is the second largest tissue manufacturer in the world, Hershey's and others, with a goal of making their production lines more reliable and productive. And I can add that, you know, the goal then is for them to be able to restock the shelves in your local supermarket. Okay. Right. And that has been our vision, right, from day one, is how do we make sure that people can always rely on the machines that matter. And we had a pretty good understanding of how much of our lives kind of depend on machines. Okay. But we could never imagine that fast forward to 2020, I will find myself in the position that when I go to the supermarket, I can't find toilet paper. Or I'm limited to only buying two cartons of milk. So I think our mission has been really kind of thrust into the kind of front lines and into the spotlight. And our approach to our customers is we are a full stack turnkey solution provider for machine health. That means that everything around machine health, we help them achieve, starting from having our own hardware, own sensors that we design and develop in-house. We manage the connectivity. We run the diagnostics that we have kind of proprietary diagnostics that we've built for machine health. And then we also have professional services, so reliability expertise or whatnot that is needed. And we try to be that kind of one-stop shop for these large companies.
So let me ask you a little bit more about that, because a lot of organizations in the IoT space are not kind of a full stack offering, right? They focus on one component of a solution and rely more on the partnership centric nature of IoT enabled in order to kind of enable solutions to be brought to market and successfully deployed. So what was the thought behind kind of going more the full stack route? And why did you go that route? And then what challenges have you kind of come across trying to do that? Because I imagine it's not always the easiest to try to have that broad of an understanding and a kind of a narrow understanding also of each of those individual components.
Yeah. So when we started, and again, this was 9 years ago, 2011, we couldn't find sensors that were adequate and were, you know, low cost, low power, and had connectivity. And we just said, okay, let's just develop our own, because I had my background from working at Intel and kind of hardware. And my co-founder was a firmware developer. He led kind of the firmware development team at a small startup. And it was very natural for us to just go and do it ourselves. I think that over time, we really developed a lot of appreciation to the power of being full stack, right? And that is in two regards. One, from the customer's perspective, right? We're not trying to sell sensors. We're trying to solve a problem. And there was a Gartner survey from earlier this year that said that 82% of digital transformations fail. And the reason is that they try to focus more on the technology than on business problem, right? And AI is a tool. It's not an outcome. So this enables us to really align everything we do with the customers or partners problem and try to solve it. And then the second piece is around innovation. Right? So if you look at full stack companies in other segments, look at Apple versus iPhone versus Android as one example, right? The reason the iPhone can scroll smoother is because they control the CPU. Right, and they can put very specific functions in the CPU and then leverage them in the user experience. And very similar, our hardware team and algo team sit in the same room. And when we build our second generation of hardware, we took everything we've learned from years and tens of thousands of machines that we've diagnosed, and we've put it into the hardware. And now we can use that for our specific algorithms, and it kind of feeds itself.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So what's been kind of the reception from customers when you kind of bring to them the full plate of offering across, the board of a solution versus, maybe the experiences they've had or experiences you've seen with other companies who kind of just offer just a piece, unless they're maybe a systems integrator and they're bringing a bunch of companies to the table, which obviously have its own kind of nuances and create and difficulties kind of working with multiple companies to build something. But what have you kind of seen from your interaction with customers on how that's contributed to success for deployments?
So to us, it all boils down to time to value. Right? And because we've spent 8-9 years kind of building a whole new data set, standardizing a data set that didn't exist, right? To this day, I would argue it still doesn't exist. And then we've built kind of pre-built models for different types of machines based on this data, right? So today we have over 40 million hours of machines that we've diagnosed and monitored. We have over 80,000 machines that we've diagnosed. And that means that from the moment our sensor is on your machine and the installation is very quick and no integrations needed, from that, from that first recording, we can provide value. And we have cases where, one of the larger food companies here in the U.S., they had a 100 machine deployment, right? Due to COVID, they did the deployment themselves. They performed the installation themselves. And it took them roughly 1 week kind of to start going. And from the time they installed the first machine till they got to the last machine, we were able to detect a malfunction. They repaired it, verified the repair, quantified it, and then they had full payback of the whole year within one day of officially being installed. And the only way you can do it is if you control everything from the hardware and the data set all the way to the diagnostics and then the services around it.
Makes sense. Okay. So you've seen great success with that. I'm curious, why do you think a lot of companies maybe don't go that route? Maybe is it just due to like kind of knowledge and expertise and kind of just maybe their general focus versus kind of going the full stack approach that you all took?
Well, it's really hard to begin with. And I think this is where being first-time entrepreneurs really came in handy. We didn't know what we were going into. But as it turns out, developing hardware and software are two different kind of DNAs that you need. The cycles, right? And you can be more agile when you do software versus hardware that requires more discipline, and you need a Gantt and you have to follow milestones. It's very challenging to fuse the two, but if you do make it, then it's really powerful.
Yeah. Okay. And are there any pieces or any kind of partnerships that you do explore? Since I know, like I mentioned before, a lot of companies focus on kind of building a partner ecosystem. Is there any component or area that you all do kind of reach out to partners for? Is everything really is everything pretty much done in-house?
No. So we try to kind of know what our core is and then partner with either incumbents that have greater reach than us, or kind of new smaller companies that have bring innovation in either hardware technologies or whatnot. And then another type of partnership, which is really interesting, is today we work with the largest manufacturers of the machines. And the goal for them is to eventually embed the diagnostics into the machine, right? So one example is Grundfos, which is the largest pump manufacturer in the world. They're a Danish company. They sell 17 million pumps every year. And they are looking to transition from selling pumps and spare parts to selling digital services or water as a service, even charging per gallon. And in order to do that, not only do they need kind of the backbone of connectivity and diagnostics, which we are working with them on, but they also need to build new capabilities and change the way they go to market, add customer success, add these professional services that they don't necessarily have today. So we're working with them hand in hand and kind of building what the future of digital water will look like. And that is very exciting for us.
That's awesome. You know, let's take kind of everything you've just said and kind of, talking a little, about the company and how you all operate. And are there any particular use cases you may be able to share to kind of bring this full circle into some examples of deployments that you've had that you'd like to talk about? If you don't want to mention company names, totally fine, but just something more real life that our audience can connect a bit with.
Sure. So one example that I can actually share is with Colgate. So Colgate, okay. Obviously everyone knows them, on their toothpaste manufacturing line, we were able, within 5 months of being deployed, we were able to provide more than 2x ROI in hard costs, hard savings rather. So instead of replacing a motor for $10,000, they were able to add more grease or change the bearing or whatnot. But even more importantly, we helped them save 192 hours of downtime. Right, and that means that they could manufacture 2.8 million tubes of toothpaste with our help. Right, and that goes way beyond the dollar value of the raw material. It provides resiliency in the supply chain, and when you couple this with what we're seeing due to COVID and the challenges that these manufacturers have been having, this is what we're here for. We're here to help them better manage risk and make better decisions based on real insights to the health and performance of their machines.
That's pretty cool.
Now we have another example with a large water manufacturer where we detected severe wear in their gearbox, on a critical gearbox, on the machine that fills the bottles with water. It's called a filler. Now, due to COVID, it's a German manufacturer of this machine. And due to COVID, they didn't have any spare parts available in the US, and they had to ship one from Germany. And it's a 4-week lead time to get the spare parts. Now, because we gave them an alert in advance, they were able to ship the spare parts and track it on a daily basis. So they had a stand-up meeting every day where the operations team, the maintenance team, opened our platform and looked at kind of what changed, how is the risk changed, what do we need to do now, can we develop a backup plan, and eventually they were able to just receive the spare parts and fix it in time without any downtime.
Wow. Okay. That's great. And are you guys, when it comes to the kind of your customer focus, are you focused more on like kind of large enterprise type companies like that?
Yeah. So today we work with the largest manufacturers within five key segments. Okay. That's food and beverage, pharma, CPG, consumer packaged goods rather, and paper.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Okay. Is the kind of goal going forward to kind of stay focused on those five areas, or is it you looking to expand in other areas based on just demand or maybe kind of, I don't know, just in general focus?
Yeah. So today we have examples of other industries within the process manufacturing world, and that is where we play. So we're not as strong in discrete manufacturing yet. So we do plan to expand more into the other segments of process industries, as well as work on new innovations that will enable us to get into discrete manufacturing.
That's awesome. Okay, great. Yeah, we've had some guests on that talked about discrete manufacturing in the past and kind of just the general opportunity there. So it seems very applicable to what y'all are doing, and I'm sure it would be a great opportunity. So I wanted to shift focus just a little bit away from the company itself and talk a bit more about kind of just the overall space on the manufacturing side, industrial side, AI side, and that kind of thing. And I wanted to just get your vantage point or view on the current state of kind of the industrial, the manufacturing IoT space. And where you see the biggest opportunities that, you know, available kind of in the coming months. I'm not sure if COVID's kind of influenced maybe how you would have viewed things 6, 7, 8 months ago, but I'm just curious to get your general take of the current state of the market.
No, for sure, COVID plays a big role, right? We're seeing an acceleration of, and this is true in general, that COVID has accelerated existing trends rather than kind of invented new behaviors. And what we found is that if eight months ago, we only worked with Fortune 500 companies that have a 5-year strategy for digitization, all of a sudden, every manufacturer needs remote collaboration. They need insight into the health and performance of their machines. And it actually opened up the mid-market for us that maybe wasn't that ready or available only 6 months ago. So we're definitely seeing an acceleration in things that would have taken 5 years or taking 5 months now in regards to technologies like ours. And I think that is a good thing. In general, what we're seeing is companies move out of kind of pilot purgatory and they're more willing now to invest in long-term projects once they see early success. We're seeing, and this is really interesting, we're seeing kind of a convergence of OT, operational technology, and IT, right? So we're seeing the CIO and his or her office take more responsibility over projects or solutions like ours. So in the past, it was, you know, oh, it's part of automation. You go under this funnel. And all of a sudden, you know, we start talking about data lakes and about security and about kind of AI or data science. And that all sits under the CIO.
Okay.
So we've been engaging way more recently with innovation teams or kind of IT teams.
Yeah, well, that's been how's that kind of how do you see that kind of taking shape over the coming months and what that's kind of going to enable the company to be able to do?
I think it's a really important milestone for the industry at large.
Yeah.
When you look at other solutions that slowly made their way into the organization, like an ERP system, right? A lot of mistakes were made in the early days. And today you have one company that has 20 different ERPs and they can't really integrate them. And at the end of the day, the VP or chief supply chain officer doesn't have a holistic view of his or her business. So by having kind of the CIO or the IT team involved from day one, they're able to force centralization or standardization rather. And that will, you know, by building this vision of the control tower that they want to build in 5 years, they're able to make sure that everyone falls in line and they actually get there. So we don't repeat the mistakes of the past with other kind of disparate systems.
Fair enough. Okay. And then if we let's take the AI side of things now, which I know you all work heavily into. How does AI, I mean, we talked about this before, this is, for probably more of our newer audience members kind of learning about IoT, but just can you talk a little bit about the connection between AI and IoT, and then also how you see the AI and IoT relationship currently as it stands, and where you see kind of the potential for those two kind of groups of technologies to work together to really, enable, solutions of the future?
So I think that both AI and IoT, in a sense, are becoming, part of the stack. So if in the past you've seen AI companies and IoT companies, I think that almost any company will need to have some sort of AI in its solution. And then if you deal with machines, you will also need to have the IoT as an interface or some way to ingest data from machines, whether you control it or not. So I think as we're maturing, it's like in the past there was NoSQL databases. There were whole companies and industries built on top of it. Today, everyone just uses it, right? So when we talk about Augury, we don't consider ourselves an AI company or IoT company. We're a machine health company because this is a problem we're coming in to solve. Now to your question, AI and machines in general, kind of machines from the computer side, are much better at dealing with, vast amounts of data than humans. And when you, specifically in the industrial market, there's so much data that is being generated every single second. And that means there's so much value to derive from that data, but we have to rely on machines to do it for us. Right? So marrying the data sets with AI solutions or machine learning solutions is necessary to really create value in this industry. And the challenge there is it's not about getting the data, it's about contextualizing the data. So if I only get a stream of 1,000 different sensors and I don't know what the machine is doing and how it's supposed to operate and what are the different variables that went into the operating of that machine, it's very hard to tell you what's wrong. How do we contextualize? How do we work with the people on the operations, on the engineering side of the customer, right? I think that is crucial.
Yeah, that's great. And when it comes to kind of connecting, as you mentioned, AI becoming part of the stack, just kind of together, it's kind of one, it's something you kind of think of them on the same page. What have been the biggest challenges that you guys have come across when it comes to working with customers and implementing the AI side of a solution? I know, AI requires data, but oftentimes a lot of these solutions were, pilots start out with no data. So how do you all approach when companies come to you looking to, hire you to help build a solution out and then implementing the AI side if, there's a lack of data on their side? Is the data maybe pulled from your kind of direct, kind of just database of data, or how does that usually work? And whose responsibility do you all see that as?
So the truth is it's very challenging, right? And that is the reason why we decided to go full stack to begin with. Right? So when you approach a customer today and you say, let's say we're an AI company without the hardware, and you say, oh, you have so much data in your system, in your historian, as it's called, or manufacturing execution system, the MES, just give me all that data and I'll figure out what's wrong. You typically start with a 7-month integration project and you understand that the OEM of the machine, you don't have permissions and they locked you out, so you don't have permissions to gain access. And then once you have the access, you need to start synchronizing and cleansing and contextualizing, as I said earlier. And only then you can start building models based on kind of things, events that happen in real time. So I need to wait for a malfunction to happen and then I can tag it and then maybe learn from it. And all of that, and you build this great model, but when you go to another factory, even if it's owned by the same company, you find out that they use a different OEM. or the system integrator customized the system a little bit differently, and you can't really infer from one factory to the next. Right, so this is very challenging. What we do, we typically start with our kind of full stack standardized approach. Right, we can deploy our sensors on all the machines within 1 week, as we shared earlier, and you're good to go. You don't have to integrate into your existing systems. And then after we show very quick value and you have positive ROI, now we can start building for the future. And now we can start integrating and doing custom projects and contextualizing the data to solve your specific problem. Right? And even then, we don't try to take on too much. We want to really work with our partner, understand what our challenges are, what type of data sets do we need, and then work together on kind of a data science project. And once we build it, we can then bring it back to production.
Okay.
And scale.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I know from past conversations and experiences, as optimistic people are around the implementation of kind of the AI technology within a solution, the data piece is always a concerning point on figuring out, you know, how will they get kind of the ROI out of that AI? And, your approach definitely answers kind of that concern and lays it out pretty clearly on how, you're able to do that successfully. So what I wanted to do is ask a quick question, because I did see that you all recently, raised a round of funding, it looks like, earlier this month, potentially. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we announced a $55 million Series D funding round just a couple of weeks ago.
That's nice. Congrats. I wanted to just, because we don't talk about this enough on the podcast, but it's a very high interest to me. I'd love to hear kind of what you saw as kind of the biggest challenges in raising funds. Now, originally, I was just going to ask in general, you know, as an IoT AI type company, but, you know, in the time of COVID and all the things going on, what do you all see as the biggest challenges for raising funds? And what general advice would you have for organizations that may be in a similar spot trying to raise around, whether it's, you know, a seed, A, B, you know, and so forth? I know this was a D round for you all, but what would you kind of say were the biggest challenges you came across? And what advice would you have for companies looking to also get out there and try to raise funds during this time?
So it does change from one stage to the other. And as you kind of grow and get to the more mature stages, it's more about numbers. And fortunately, we had them kind of to prove our growth. And we also could prove that COVID was good for us, in a sense, outside of the, you know, the people health challenges and working remotely and whatnot. We are fortunate to be working in the key segments that have not really suffered from COVID. So we're not in automotive, we're not in aviation. We are in food and toilet paper and cleaning products and pharmaceuticals, right? So you could say that it's like you need some luck in life, and I guess this is our piece. But in general, in the earlier stages of fundraising, it's very important to paint a picture. Right, of there is a huge wave of transformation coming to the world. With or without us, this is going to happen. And once you convince the investor that that is true, and with IoT, industrial IoT and Industry 4.0, it's been challenging because, you know, we've been talking about the same buzzwords for 5 or 6 years with no real traction in the market, no real movements in the market. But once you sell kind of that there is this wave coming, and it's clear this is going to happen, then your next job is to convince the investor that you are the best team at the right time to do it. So those are the only two things you need to do, and it sounds easy. But you know, now you start to go into what evidence can I show? And for us, the evidence now recently is our expansions, right? The fact that we can get the time to value every single deployment we had in the last 12 months received full payback or positive ROI within less than 3 months. And that means that within 6 months, we quadruple the account. So they want four more facilities, as an example, right? And then they grow. So having those proof points and evidence that something is different today, we've all heard of Industry 4.0 for 5 years, but now it actually is happening. for whatever reason, right? It could be maturity, it could be COVID, it could be us, but now it's real. I think that is kind of, that was the key for us to being successful.
Well, that's awesome. Well, congrats on all that success. That's, you know, having the numbers when it comes to raising funding is not always the easiest part. And having success during a pandemic is also not an easy thing to achieve. But luckily, you guys were positioned in a very good spot, given the situation that kind of the world has come across these last number of months. And you've been able to, you know, since turn it, you know, into a positive for your business. And that's fantastic.
No, thank you. Yeah, again, some of it is luck and a lot of hard work around it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the combination that every company strives for, is a little bit of luck and obviously the hard work part. Before we wrap up here, I want to ask you one last question. So a lot of companies out there are, you know, obviously looking to grow and scale their organization, not just regionally, but also globally. And I wanted to just get your thoughts really quickly on where you see the biggest challenges lying for a company looking to kind of grow out of their own region and try to have more of a global presence in the IoT and AI space.
So there are multiple layers to consider here because you said IoT, right? So in general, a company, as it looks to grow, culture is the first thing that I would point at, right? So on one hand, you don't have as much control, right? Because you're not in the office with everyone and you can't see them. And specifically during COVID, we're all remote, which adds another layer of challenge. And that's number one. Number two, you're bringing on different cultures. Different regions, different countries have different cultures and you need to also adapt for it. I would say that for IoT, you also need to consider on the hardware side, certifications and supply chains, and it just gets more complex. And this is what we're living through now, right? So our customers being global companies, they expect us to support them globally, and they're rightfully so. So we have one rollout that is, you know, they're taking us to Japan and Egypt and Saudi Arabia and two countries in Latin America, all within one company and one rollout. So we don't have as much freedom to say, okay, now we're going to conquer this region or you know, France or Germany or whatever. We have to support them. So that is our own challenge. But I think that if you want to work with these large companies, this is something you have to do.
Absolutely. I totally agree. It's been an interesting topic of conversation for a lot of companies we've spoken with on how to approach that. And I think the cultural angle is a very important one. So that's great advice and kind of great observations from your experience. And I guess the way I wanted to finish up this conversation was just to see if there are any other new and exciting things happening over at the company for, you know, in the next couple of months. I mean, obviously the D round is a huge and exciting milestone for the company and everyone attached, but you know, outside of that, is there anything else that we should be on the lookout for, that may be relevant to our audience? And then at the same time, if there's what's the best way to kind of engage with the organization if the audience has any questions or follow up?
Yeah, one other thing that we also released in the last couple of quarters is Guarantee Diagnostics. So basically, we partnered with Munich Re, which is the largest global reinsurance company. And when Augury says a machine is okay, and for whatever reason it fails, we cover the replacement costs, both the parts and the labor around it. And it's interesting for a number of different reasons, but this is the first time, even outside of industrial, the first time that an insurance company backed an AI diagnostic solution, right? So it took us 5 years of working together with their team to build the confidence in our diagnostics, in our results, in the accuracy of our results, and then have them kind of back an AI-based solution. So I hope it's kind of first of many solutions to come, because I do feel that the insurance market has a role to play in AI as we move more critical, sometimes life or death decisions to computers. Someone needs to take the risk, and I believe it's the insurance companies. So hopefully.
That's super interesting. I mean, that's a topic we should have another conversation around, is how the insurance kind of plays into everything, and kind of their role in an offering like this, because I think we've had like one or two guests on talk about the insurance side, but that's really interesting. I mean, I was always curious kind of how that would be set up and arranged, because that seems like a very unique offering for customers, but also a very expensive endeavor given that something does go wrong. So having those insurance companies actively engaged and involved is kind of a unique approach that we don't talk enough about.
Yeah, and if you look at the smart home market as an example, today they offer discounts if you put leak detectors or fire alarms. So we should expect the same in the industrial market, right? If you can reduce the risk of the, you know, catastrophe happening, mm-hmm. you will pay less premiums.
It makes total sense. Why do you think that's kind of been, is that a relatively new kind of approach that companies are taking with insurance companies kind of partnering up and going to market like that? Or is it something that maybe just is new to this industry market? Because like you said, yes, if, you know, on the smart home side or even just the home ownership side, if you have, like for instance, where I live, we have, you know, different precautions like that taken in our units, and you get a discount on like renter's insurance, for instance, when it comes to that. So do you think that's just something that's just now being more enabled and that's why it's kind of getting picked up, or what are your thoughts?
So they always had, I mean, the notion of let's adjust premiums based on the risk has been forever in the industrial markets. If you do a preventive maintenance, as an example, and you comply with certain standards, you will get a discount, right? So I think that the technology that enables you to reduce risk has only really kind of came to the field recently, right? With a solution like ours and maybe others. So it is all new. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, look, it looks like you all have a ton of exciting stuff going on. The approach you're all taking, you know, sounds fantastic. It's obviously working. Getting to a D round for that amount of money, I'm sure is going to enable you all to do some very, very exciting stuff that we hope that we'll be able to kind of follow along in that journey. You know, if we'd love to have you back at some point, maybe next year, to just talk about kind of the progress you all have made, and maybe just kind of broach a few different topics that we kind of like just chatted about here briefly, but maybe expand on a bit more. So other than that, you know, I really appreciate your time. Would love to have you back some point next year, like I said. And I think our audience is going to get a lot of value out of this conversation. So thanks again.
No, thank you. I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, everyone, thanks again for listening to that episode of the IoT for All podcast. I hope you found a lot of value in it. If you did, we would truly appreciate it if you would leave a rating or review on whichever platform you're listening to us on. Also, feel free to subscribe to our podcast directly or our newsletter or our social media to ensure you get the latest episodes as soon as they become available. But other than that, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.